Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
Queen of Extreme Francine.
And the franchise Shane Douglas. Well, you want the lowdown on professional wrestling? Get it right here at this podcast, Extreme Three Way Dance.
North South Connection with the most extreme menage a trois violence you have experienced here in the Extreme Three-Way Dance. JT, Jenny, and Maddie Sue's here. Talk all things ECW through history. North South Connection talks a lot of different things as well. WrestleMania season, we have all kind of WrestleMania content. Brian Gray is leading a Pied. No, he's the Pied Piper, right? Leading. What does the Pied Piper lead? Pied people? He's leading a bunch of people.
Pickled peppers.
Pied people?
He's bringing Pied people. He's bringing a lot of
You're
stars.
Just making words up now.
Illuminaries counting down the greatest WrestleMania performers of all time. That's a lot of fun. I think he's doing top 40. Each edition has three. We even got Scott Keith back for the museum to come and do this. So that's nice. Been exciting to have him back out doing some content for us. We have a lot of cool different folks that we've gotten to know through various TikTok stars and others joining us here, the staples in North South Connection, to count down those. And of course, Ryan and I are also working our way through every single WrestleMania match ever in order, counting them down from 402 to 1. We are almost there. We're inside the top 100. And number one will drop on WrestleMania Saturday. So be sure to check that out, as well as all the other content, WrestleMania themed, of course, Wrestling Warzone, myself and Chad on that show, or at WrestleMania 13 as well. And while we're at it, we'll give a quick plug to the Kings of Sport, our good friend Nate Milton. He's got a Patreon feed. You want to check that out, Jenny, because you have a brand new show on that Patreon, right?
I do. It is called the Avenge Hers Initiative, and it is looking at the female characters and stories from the MCU. So it's me and Nate Milton and Brittany Monet. Our first episode drops on March the 8th.
Yeah. Little Monet means big business to some. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see you. Good to see you getting back into the MCU talk. It's always fun to hear, of course. So you can subscribe there. The preview teaser episode is out. You get a few minutes if you're a subscriber to the Patreon. You get the full 35-minute preview. So subscribe there. Check that out. Of course, everything else, North South Connection. The WrestleMania countdown is short based. I meant to mention that. So we're doing all 42 matches, but they're all under a minute. So they're all on TikTok or YouTube Shorts, Instagram, Facebook Reels. So just follow us there if you want to get in on that. And they're quick to catch up. I mean, what's, 300-something minutes of your time, right, at this point? Mm-hmm. Something.
I'm not doing math. Okay.
Well, 1 minute per... whatever that is. So
I'm still not doing math.
Just spend a couple days on TikTok and you'll knock it right out.
Yeah, it's nothing. All right, let's dive right in here. We're going through the history of ECW. We started in February 1994 and we have matriculated our way into March of 1999. Cruising our way toward the end of ECW. We are here on the March 6, 1999 edition of Hardcore Television. We have 3 weeks of TV to get to tonight. And in 2 weeks, we'll be back with our next pay-per-view, Living Dangerously. So that's exciting. All right, we open with a clip montage of Sid's Reign of Terror, the hyping from Jeff Jones as he arrived at Guilty as Charged. We then get our opening animation. Taz is out in the streets. He welcomes us to his world, Red Hook. A lot of guys are from the bad neighborhoods and tough towns, but he's from South Brooklyn. There's no beach or thong bikinis or fancy muscles. Just a bunch of homeless dirtbags on the corner ready to jack you up. And that's what's made him world champion. He walks to his dojo every day and wonders why he's from this shit town. But that made him mean and the champion. Joey in the Nest hypes Living Dangerously, which is coming up quickly. He says Taz will face Sabu for the ECW world title. Joey says that a WCW Uncensored was inspired by ECW, and they can't say differently. And they're having an extreme hardcore match with Raven, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Hack. Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair in a barbed wire cage. And no way that 50-year-old men are using real barbed wire. You know it's going to be gimmicked. But in ECW, they don't. And that shows that Sabu will do anything to be champion. And as a result, we get the Sabu versus Terry Funk Born to be Wired match, which we've covered here. Mm-hmm. Didn't air on TV previously. So they're trying to up the stakes a little bit by showing it some of it here. And of course, we covered that as a special episode with our good buddy Rocco Martone. So dig that in the archives if you want to relive that bloodbath. But Matt, what do you think of the opening stretch here with Taz at home and then into Joey kind of taking shots at Mrs. Smith's favorite WCW pay-per-view lineage Uncensored?
I liked the Taz stuff. You could tell it was shot on like someone's home camera. Like it had that home video camera graininess to it. It was just a cool visual seeing him walk through this alleyway and just cutting a promo to no one, like somebody, like normal people in Brooklyn do at seemingly 3 a.m, just talking to themselves and yelling. So I thought that was great. A bunch of dirt bags ready to jack your ass was a great line. So yeah, Taz is Taz, and Joey going off on Uncensored. Listen, we've covered it before. They hate WCW, but man, he really went after it. Like I forgot that the barbed wire cage match was in 99. So hearing that, it was like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. Well, isn't that, I mean, that match ends up being okay, but it also has the great double turn, right? Or is that Super Bowl? It's Uncensored, the double turn with the first.
Uncensored's the one like with the. Uncensored is the one with the messed up finish where it was like a weird first blood cage out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think that's a double turn where Hogan turns face against the big pop. So I think it actually ends up being okay.
No.
But yeah, they have all the ECW guys in the other one, Bigelow, Raven, and Sandman in the hardcore match. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if they said anything on TV, WCW, to like kind of prod ECW or just using those guys, and they just figured us use it to hype up our own shit. But it was pretty funny timing, Jenny.
It was. I kind of wish the whole episode was just going to be that Sid montage of him destroying people, because that was awesome. And ECW just loves Sid so much, just right out of the gate. Like, he's like a 911 for us again. We're doing some throwback characters, which I love. And then this promo from Taz is much like an old school ECW promo in a dingy ass alleyway somewhere with poor lighting, and Taz rambling about being from the streets, and that makes him tough. This was all very good stuff, and I appreciated Joey preaching about Uncensored. I don't know that match that he referenced with the cage or whatever, so I need to go back and watch that if it's going to be any good.
I don't remember if the match is good. I feel like it was one of those ones that just kind of like everyone thought was gonna be brutal in it, like not brutal in a rough, just brutal in a bad way. Right. But it ended up kind of like exceeding expectations from what I remember a little bit. And that might be more the set the turn surprised people. But anyway, I haven't seen it in forever either. We're not talking about it because Joey's in the Nest. He says Eric Bischoff is a WCW president. He went on Chicago radio and made sure he doesn't want to be painted with the same brush as the WWF, which rebuilt the promotion by copying ECW. He said WCW will be G-rated, but then he goes and bills an extreme three-way hardcore match and a barbed wire cage match. A G-rated barbed wire. Joey says they haven't done a barbed wire match since August 9th, 1997, and that is because they set the standard and no one will top it. Ric Flair is 50 years old and a millionaire. Hulk Hogan doesn't even let his back touch canvas, let alone wire. That's a great line. Uncensored, inspired by WCW, airs on March 14th, and they have $1 billion and a ton of publicity. Joey says, instead, the fans, go ahead and buy that pay-per-view and watch their version of barbed wire, but then order Living Dangerously and see that extreme and hardcore are gimmicks. It's what ECW does. So I think this whole campaign is a little brilliant. I think they basically used Bischoff going on this radio show and taking a shot at extreme wrestling, right? And they played it off and used it as their own personal advertising for their own pay-per-view. And they're saying, yeah, go order Uncensored. Sure. Because they know their confidence is going to suck. Mm-hmm. And then you can go ahead and order our show and see real violence. And so I think it's a really sharp way to do it. So anyway, any final thoughts on the Uncensored stuff before we kind of put that behind us?
No, I thought the Joey was on, you know, he was on a soapbox and he was kind of preaching and doing his thing. And I think it's smart too, you know, encouraging people to go to look at a shitty match, quote unquote shitty match, to compare it to their product. So
yeah, I feel like it's been a while since we've seen Joey go this far in on someone or something. Probably credible. It's been a couple of months, but yeah, it was. I thought it was very entertaining. Him basically saying, "Yeah, look, we know this is gonna suck. Watch it. We dare you. See how bad they are, and then watch us and see how good we are." So I thought it was, like you said, very smart on their part.
All right, Joel Gertner, the Dudleys, and Mr. Mustafa are on a stoop. Mustafa offers Joel a new Franklin if he does things right. Joel formally introduces Mr. Mustafa as a family member and says he has a State of the Union address. Tonight in the hood, impoverished infants are wallowing in cesspools of their own excrement because they happen to be born to mothers that were crack-addicted whores, selling themselves to get another vial, turning tricks for $5. That's the hood. New Jack and his giving spirit always needs a friend around and somebody in tow. And just like Gravano taught Gotti, there's nothing but self-preservation in the hood. New Jack never learned that lesson or a lot of things. Now he goes to an informal education for a lesson he should have been taught on the streets as a kid. His mother should have taught him if she wasn't busy whoring herself out to any John, Dick, and Harry on the street. A lesson he could have been taught by his father if he hadn't left when New Jack was three. The lesson is that cash, not faith, hope, or friends, or God rules everything around me. Mustafa pays Joel, sign guy, and they scamper off. Bubba says New Jack learned the meaning of brotherhood and friendship, but he's the stupidest son of a bitch they've ever seen and never knows when to quit or stay down. He's not as smart as Public Enemy was. They knew enough to realize they were too afraid to face the Dudleys after Detroit. New Jack is dumb as a stump and twice as ugly and has no life to live for, no family, and nothing. And they will kick New Jack's ass daily, and the time is now to be afraid, be smart of the men who will hurt him, step in the ring every night, or pack it in and hightail it back to whatever sick place he calls home. They have nothing against New Jack, but if Mustafa keeps paying them with new $100 bills, he's a dead man because cash rules everything around them. Mustafa tells New Jack it's over and shows off his money and asks the Dudleys to head out so they can spend some cash, Jenny. Great promo by the Dudleys and Gertner here. Mustafa playing his role perfectly, just me mugging and tossing dollar bills, $100 bills at them. Gertner was on fire. I thought it was really well done. It really built some good hype for Mustafa versus New Jack, which I don't know if that's a feud we would have been super into without the way they're going about it and the Dudleys being part of it.
Yeah, I got to admit the Dudleys have elevated whatever we've got going on between them. Mostly Joel and his absolute bullshit promos that are very, very good. And again, we're in this dingy location in a stairwell somewhere in Asbury, New Jersey. So it's... it's very effective getting across this whole money angle, which I don't know is the best angle, but it's fine. To me, the money angle is played out, especially in ECW. I feel like we see it a lot. Yeah. And Mustafa seemed just like an unlikely person to just be having this much money and just throwing
that's
it around.
That's the part of it.
Like, so, that's my question too.
Yeah. Like, where's they should have like explained why suddenly.
Agreed.
I mean, it's not like he's raking cash in ECW.
No.
Did he turn to the drug game? Like, what is it? Where did he get this money? Right. To say he came into this money from this.
I feel like they're saying it without saying it. Like maybe we're supposed to infer that he's a drug dealer. That's me, but it's good for what they're doing, but I just wish there was a little bit more explanation on that end.
I just think they're out of shit to do with the Dudleys, Matt. Like so they're kind of turning to this like bounty role, which ironically enough is where we get the APA sooner than later in this timeline, not in ECW, but in WWF, right? That's like at the end of 99. They're one of the few I think that really have done the bounty hunter like excellently on the APA side. What they're really trying to do with the Dudleys here, where they're just saying no one can beat us, everyone's too afraid to challenge us, so we'll just start taking payoffs and kick the shit out of people for fun and for money. So I mean it's at least a way to keep them fresh, right? I guess, because they really have nothing going on right now.
And I think it kind of makes sense too, because I mean if this was just Mustafa by himself, Like, I don't think it would work as well as it's working. Like, he needs the Dudleys, exactly. Like, you put him with someone like the Dudleys to speak for him, to just kind of be a presence with him. I think it makes a lot more sense. But yeah, this was really well done. Again, the dinginess, like you guys said, but what you mentioned is my big question. Where did he get the money? Like, I wish they would get into that more. And like maybe Jenny said, maybe they're saying it without saying it, but I'm not that kind of learner. I need to hear it.
Yeah. You know? Like,
infer that he like robbed a bank. I mean, he's a gangster.
Just so, whatever it is.
Or played a guy and you know, won a bunch of cash. Like,
found the money on the street. Like,
insurance fraud. I don't know.
Just say he went to Atlantic City and like got hot one night and won a bunch of money, you know? So he's using it to
his own
get back
for insurance. I mean, something, you know?
Yeah, they give us something. All right, Joey's in the nest. He talks about double crosses in wrestling history, how they always happen, but no one saw this one coming. The Dudleys are being paid off by Mustafa to run off Public Enemy. I do like that part of it. I like that they explain away to Public Enemy that, you know, Mustafa had a grudge from their old feud, Public Enemy versus the Gangsters, which was a very hot feud in both Smoky Mountain, you know, kind of crossing over. There was more Gangsters Cornette, but kind of crossing over to ECW and taking the same approach. So, like, that part I liked, and it kind of naturally, they retconned it into this, so I thought that was good. And then Assault New Jack as well. Joey says Mustafa thinks money buys him respect, and that will be shocking, is what New Jack does to Mustafa. We cut to New Jack on the stoop. He's bleeding from the head. He says the Dudleys are stupid and don't know better, but Mustafa has to deal with him. On pay-per-view, in Asbury Park, Mustafa doesn't know what he got into. He promises he doesn't care about belts. That night, he'll work for free. He just wants to kick Mustafa's ass and... CCW, so the jokes write themselves. He probably basically worked for free anyway. And Mustafa could go back to Nevada with his broke ass and know that he was the biggest mistake that he could have made was this. New Jack created the violence. ECW, WCW, WWF, and everywhere else, New Jack started it. Mustafa was a gopher and happy to get a check. He didn't need him then, but now he does need him. And it'll be black-on-black crime at its finest. Mustafa is going down. He promises he'll hurt him. He'll deal with the Dudleys later, but a living dangerously, he's begging Mustafa to show up so he can perform surgery on his ass. He tells Mustafa to kiss his ugly wife and kids goodbye because in Asbury, it'll be a homicide, not a match. This is kind of a vintage New Jack promo. I don't know, maybe once again, he's trying to get that Denzel's friend role auditioning for Beyond the Mat, but he really brought it in this one too. I thought he was really, really good, Matt. I like the line about the ugly wife and the homicide was a strong way to close it. It felt personal. And then again, I didn't think I'd be drawn into a feud between the old gangsters, but it's been good.
Right. That's the thing is like the promos kind of sold me on it. I mean, I wasn't really sold on it before. I thought it was kind of weird that Mustafa just randomly shows up again out of nowhere and I'm going to turn on you with a bunch of money. But these promos have kind of sold me on it. I mean, New Jack he's an incredible promo. He's an underrated promo, I think. Not a lot of people talk about his promo skills and how good he was. And the line where he says basically he started all the hardcore stuff and called Mustafa a gopher was fantastic. And calling the match a homicide, which I'm fairly certain that's usually how a New Jack match goes, is it's usually pretty violent. So I don't think this is going to be like Brett Owen at Mania 10. I'll say that.
I love the blood, and he just like lets it go down his face and like drips into his mouth as he's talking. He's kind of fucking hardcore and badass, which matches him in this promo. I thought it was really well done. I like how he just kind of throws the Dudleys aside. He's like, I ain't even mad at the Dudleys. They're too stupid and they don't even know any better. And he makes it real, real personal between him and Mustafa. So I like how he says he'll work for free to kick his ass. And also liked the kiss your ugly ass wife and your kids. That was great.
All right. Taz is still roaming the streets of Brooklyn. He says ECW doesn't want to risk bringing a $20,000 camera to this town in the real world. He's been hearing someone is hot at him and his name is Sabu, but Taz must be hot at Sabu then, because if Sabu is hot about, is he hot about that Taz beat and choked him out and barely legal? Or is he hot because he dragged his limp ass on him to give him the FTW title? Or is he hot because Taz is the world champion and Taz wants him hot and living dangerously? Joey's in the nest, talks about the big Taz Shane Douglas match from House Party. We see that. We then get clips of Storm and Credible assaulting Tommy Dreamer Douglas from Queens. We get a hype ad for Living Dangerously. And then Taz is back in the streets. He says there's a dead pro wrestler with scars, long hair, and stinks like shit. He's got baggy pants, and his name is Sabu. He's getting choked out in Jersey. There's going to be a beating. He'll get beat up by Sabu, but Sabu will get beat up worse. Not because he's world champion or tougher or better. He's just going to beat Sabu up more because he has to. Because the world title brought him to a new level. And when Sabu was at that level, Sabu never gave him the chance. Shane Douglas at least had the balls to give a shot. And you know, Sabu has the heart of a lion, and he loves it the most because he has the heart at the size of a lion, Texas, and pumps a ton of blood. He can't wait to rip it out of his chest and show it to him on pay-per-view. Sabu better train and prepare and pray because all he needs all the help he can get. Not Fonzie or Van Dam. They are irrelevant. He needs help from a higher power because Taz can't be stopped. He is the world champion. Beat me if you can. Survive if I let you. And that wraps up this episode. So not a ton going on here. We obviously didn't have any new content to show, so they run back a couple of classic matches. You know, we get some promo work. But any final thoughts on that last stretch there?
Yeah, I mean, it was fairly – the Taz stuff ended up being pretty good overall. It was fairly basic, but I think the vibe of him just walking through the streets of Brooklyn really helped it. Like, it hit more doing that than if he was, like, in a studio with a towel over his head, I think.
Yeah,
the location really helped Taz out in these promos. Not that they're weak, it's just sort of generic and sort of the same things that we've heard from him before. He's not really saying –
I like the line about the camera – like you mentioned earlier, he's got kind of a shitty camera. Like, I like that they at least explain why. Like, they're not risking bringing the nice shit now that they have out into the streets.
That's smart. And, you know, some of these promos I wish were spaced out, you know, and not just a whole episode with, you know, old matches and promos. Maybe, you know, kind of mix it up a little bit. It seems like they tend to kind of do promos as an afterthought. A lot of times.
Yeah. And it's weird that we have an episode with like no new stuff because this isn't like it's after a pay-per-view, which is usually when we get something like this. So they really must have just been in between shows for whatever reason, because I mean, this is like a full on, just like vintage match episode, which is odd.
Right.
Yeah. It's a weird one.
I mean, they did show the Born to Be Wired, which is kind of different, I guess. Something that hadn't really aired. So that's one thing. All right. So no match, no on either way, no best or worst. I gave the Dudley's promo the best moment. I thought that was great.
Yep.
Yeah, I would do Dudley's.
Most 90s, I'm with Joey shitting on WCW.
Sounds right.
Stock Rising, I'm with Taz, Dudley's, and New Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And my only stock falling was Taz's Kevin James hat.
I don't like it. You don't like that?
I hate those hats. Those stupid backwards paperboy hats.
I'm the king of Brooklyn.
Isn't that a classic Taz look, though, that hat?
Yeah, it's just a big late 90s thing. I just never liked the look of it. And Kevin James and then Triple H in 99 are the two people that always come to my mind when I see those stupid hats. But
and now Taz.
And now Taz, I guess. So I just went 5 out of 10 on this. I mean, whatever. It was just like a throwaway episode, but still entertaining, you know. Especially if you had never seen that barbed wire match. I mean, if you're watching, like, if you're a newer fan, you're like getting to see that for the first time. So,
yeah, I thought it was cool seeing that back. But yeah, 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 5.
All right, let's go ahead a week to March 13th. We open with a clip of a match where the FBI are stooging and getting eliminated from a 3-way dance, leaving Danny Doring and Roadkill to battle Rotten Balls. Doring works over Balls with a chin lock, but he breaks out of a back suplex with a back suplex, tags Axel. And they clean house to win the match. So just kind of highlights. Joey's in the nest hyping up Living Dangerously and the card ahead. Clip of Taz doing a local radio spot where he talks about Sabu at Living Dangerously. Kind of the usual hype job from the champ. We get our opening animation. Joey's in the nest. He hypes Living Dangerously. Says there were recently in ECW Arena and full results from that show are on the hotline. And ECW.com broke the story that New Jack versus Mr. Mustafa has been added to the pay-per-view. We didn't get Jerry Lynn backstage. He says he's been waiting patiently in Global, USWA, WWF, WCW, and now ECW. And he knew his wrestling would get him to the top. He's not playing any politics. Tonight he has an opportunity, and the patience is up. So, Jenny, any thoughts on that opening little flurry of stuff?
Did they say they were in Dover, Delaware for this episode?
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
That's a new one for us.
I don't think we've been in Delaware.
Hello, I'm in Delaware.
Delaware. That's my same thought. I like the shot of Taz doing the radio interview. That's different. Not seen anything really like that before. Mm-hmm. Shows them kind of branching out a little bit more, getting some more promotion. So that's a good thing. Jerry Lynn certainly was quite fired up in his Jerry Lynn promo. I don't know why they always pop me. Like, I love Jerry Lynn, and his promo style is just so...
He's like a school teacher.
It's so bad it's good. That makes sense. I don't know. I just really like it. It really works for me, and I loved seeing him. And I wish they would let him talk more.
Yeah, I feel like it had been a while since we've seen Jerry Lynn. He had the broken bottom half of his entire body or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it had been a while. It was good to see him again. Taz did call the match with Sabu the Thriller in Manila. So that popped me. That was very good. But yeah, good to see Jerry Lynn again. Hopefully he's fully recovered and we see him every week, because it turns out that he is very good at what he does.
The Thrill, Sherry, and Asbury.
Wow.
All right, time for something we haven't had in a while.
Right?
Action? Is this probably one of since we've had some Pulp Fiction? But again, this told me, like, all right, we're definitely light on content. We're back to digging up Pulp Fiction to kill time. Mm-hmm. Just Incredible, Lance Storm talk shit backstage. They bicker a bit over who will be the next franchise. And Beulah, bitch, wants some FaceTime as well. We get a clip of the gangsta implosion in Queens. New Jack says, anytime he tried to help someone, they try to fuck him. The first time Mustafa got locked up, he said he didn't need New Jack, but he realized New Jack created the gangsters. He let Mustafa be part of it, but now Mustafa sold him out and joined the Dudleys. New Jack won't come to Reno. You will hope and pray he shows up at the pay-per-view, and his fake-ass fucking Muslim, he promises to beat the fuck out of him. He'll beat his ass so bad he doesn't care if he gets hurt, too. He's in a $30,000 Benz while Mustafa's in a cheap caddy from his father. He's always been a fake and not a man. And if he shows up, he'll get his ass tore up. It's black-a-black crime at his finest. If he doesn't kill Mustafa, he'll kill himself trying, because Mustafa's nothing but a sellout. He's a white man dressed as a black man. He has no respect for him. He'll get loose on his ass. We see a clip of the Dudleys paying Mustafa, showing off $100 bills. We then get a clip of... from Queens on Don Callis when he was looking on at Lance Storm's Beulah antics. Dreamer backstage rants and goes on into Shane's locker room. Shane says Tommy doesn't want to talk, but he will. Storm and Credible want to steal the revolution that they started from the company they built in 1993, and no one does it better than him. He was ready to walk away and hand over the keys, but they tried to push him out, and he doesn't like being pushed around. Just ask Scott Hall, Ric Flair, or Hulk Hogan. And now they put him and Tommy together, and they believe in what they started, and they're not going to hand it over without a fight. They took their shot. They made a mistake, but Francine is tough. She's taking hits from the Pitbulls and the Eliminators and still gotten up. Shane is pissed. Tommy is too. And the triple threat new incarnation is more dangerous than anyone can imagine. They want to be kings of extreme. They'll be taken to the extreme. We then see Fonzie, Van Damme, and Sabu in the hallway. RVD does his usual great Fonzie impression as they talk about Sabu's big match with Jerry Lynn tonight and the usual RVD double talk. So just great stuff here. New Jack was on fire. I thought Douglas was really good. Matt, I thought, it closes well with RVD doing his usual stick.
Yeah, New Jack is he's doing his damnedest to put over this Mustafa match, and he's doing a hell of a job doing it. It's smart because they know he's a good talker, so it's like, shit, might as well just have him out, sell the match, because, you know, it may need all the help it gets. So basically just go out there and sell the thing. So he was really good. I liked Shane putting over Fran for being tough as nails. That was great because, you know, she looked like she was still hurting during that promo. So that was really good. But it had been a while since we had seen a Pulp Fiction. I missed it. And this was a very good one, a long one, but a very good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they put like little clips in there and kind of in between the little promos. So that was a little bit different. Yeah, damn, New Jack, really, he went really hard in this promo. I let you be a part of me, and you always been fake. Boy, he went really deep. And again, just making it even more and more personal. And I really think he is going to be on his shit at the pay-per-view. I truly believe it. I like Tommy just like blowing off the camera and saying that he's not going to talk about Beulah. That's classy on his part. And that Shane promo was it. That was it for me. Loving on Francine during his promo was a way to my heart. And he had really good points about Lance Storm and just incredible. And then of course Fonzie and RVD and Sabu are the best.
Yeah, and Shane, it's a good role for him. It's kind of like the guy on his last legs, you know, just trying to stand up for ECW one more time against these young punks. He's ready to step away, get pulled in for one last fight, you know. So I think he's handling it well as far as the direction of the angle. All right, we get an ad for Living Dangerously. Joey's in the Nest. He talks about Crossing the Line 1999, which is available on home videos, taped in Queens. That's the show where Mustafa turned on New Jack. Douglas and Dreamer got assaulted by Storm Incredible. Taz returned home, and we had an RVD versus Jerry Lynn battle that could lead to Lynn winning the TV title at Living Dangerously. Speaking of Jerry Lynn, he's headed to the ring, take on Sabu. This is in Dover, as you mentioned, Jenny. Lynn is looking for the FTW title here on top of his TV title. Joey says he thinks RVD is hoping Lynn wins, so the FTW title could be on the line. Fonzie leads out Sabu. We have some new set pieces around the building, a new jazzed up ring apron, so kind of gussying things up a little bit here. We get clips of the vicious war between Sabu and Sandman from a year ago, Living Dangerously 98. And then we get going. We get some chain work from both guys that quickly spirals to a slugfest. Lynn dodges a slingshot sidekick, hits a back elbow for two. Lynn slams Sabu, heads up top, but Sabu stops him, counters into a top rope Rana. Lynn rolls through for a near fall. Sabu dumps him out, drives him into the fans of the baseball side, meets him with a triple jump plancha. Sabu dumps Lynn back to ringside, misses a dive, and bangs his damaged jaw hard off the apron. Back inside, Lynn targets the jaw, hitting a gourd buster, stomping away. Lynn hits a nice leg drop off the middle rope for two. Goes back up, but Sabu crotches him, throws a chair at him. Lynn falls to the apron. Fonzie drags him onto a table bridge. He slides off as Sabu flies out and smashes his jaw on the table. Sabu's in pain. RVD's out to check on him. Fonzie retapes the jaw. Sabu kicks at Fonzie so he can get back in the ring. Lynn kicks him right in the mouth as he gets back in. He's out bleeding from the jaw. RVD tries to get Sabu to give up, but Lynn drop kicks them together as they're talking. Lynn hits a low blow. He springboards off Sabu into RVD through another table bridge. Lynn just like balling out here. Uh-huh. Sabu crawls to his feet, but Taz's music hits. He storms out. Taz and Sabu throw down. Taz hammers at the jaw, tries the Tazplex. Sabu kicks him low, hits a triple jump moonsault. Fonzie sets up a table in the corner, and they run into each other, or they run each other into it. And there's pretty much no winner. So it's an abrupt ending. We just kind of end with the brawl. I thought Lynn looked fantastic. The crowd was into it, especially when Taz showed up. They really got fired up. It was an intense brawl at the end. Sabu's jaw could be a problem for him at the pay-per-view. We'll see. Lynn and RVD set up for a big rematch. I went 3 stars, Jenny. That was a really good match. This is one time I didn't mind the non-finish because you're not going to give Lynn the FTW title probably, and you can't beat Sabu going into Living Dangerously. So it was a cool showcase for both guys, and here, to me, the non-finish made sense.
It does make sense. I just hate it. It's just not, I'm just not a fan of it, but I get why. So it's fine. Only dinged it a little bit, but there's a lot of good spots in this one. Good punches, I thought, especially on Sabu's end. He is just a fucking madman, and his jaw becomes a whole ass character. And
yeah,
the pay-per-view. So like Sabu's jaw is, I don't know how it's even hanging on, honestly, at this point. I don't know how any part of Sabu is hanging on. Because he balls out just as hard as fucking Jerry Lynn does, like he does every match. I say this every Jerry Lynn match. I love him. He is awesome. He elevates every single match that he's in. He always has some crazy-ass shit that you don't expect, but you should. Like, you should expect this out of Jerry Lynn. But he always surprises me in these matches. He has no give up. He completely is toe-to-toe with Sabu during this match, which is amazing. But in a cool, messy way. I did 2 3/4, Matt.
I went three on this really fun match. Just a lot of great spots in this. Like you said, the stuff with the broken jaw was just disgusting. Like, good God, like, take a week off, man. Like, you're in fucking Dover, Delaware. You don't need to do this. What are you doing, man? Christ's sake. There was one, there was a title belt shot to Sabu at one point that just sounded brutal and nasty. So I didn't mind the finish either. It makes sense. You really don't want either guy losing going into the pay-per-view. They're both involved in massive matches, so I didn't mind that. I kind of expected something weird like that was going to happen in this match, but super fun match while it lasted. Both these guys are on a roll right now, so I went 3 stars on it.
Is this the best like jaw angle ever, Matt? I can't think of another time where like a wrestler had like a, they really focused on like the jaw. You think it's something they do more of in wrestling, but yeah. I can't think of another one where they, I mean, Steamboat was more the throat with Savage. Mm-hmm.
I think it's because it's so awkward to like tape it or to like cover it. Yeah. Like
right. With Sabu, it's believable because it's like an animal.
Keeps coming off of him throughout all this.
Surprised they didn't strap like a muzzle on him at some point. Like,
why not?
Bring the Hannibal Lecter mask back.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That would fit. That would fit his gimmick.
If anyone listening or watching can think of another jaw-based angle, let us know what we're missing here.
Please.
All right, Joey's in the Nasty says, Storm's refusing to go to the ring because the announcer won't call his valet Beulah. Rob Zombie's with us, hyping ECW. So there you go. Cool little cameo.
Like that.
We then get to our next match, which is Lance Storm versus Shane Douglas. Storm hits the ring. Joey says, poor Rob Zombie got suckered into writing the music for this jerk Lance Storm. Of course, that's what awesome ECW, the album, which is out around this time, one of my favorite wrestling albums of all time. Storm has Beulah with him. The Dover crowd wants tits. Storm says the crowd can relax as they're not going to see him. Since Heyman doesn't allow the announcer to do proper intros, he'll do it himself. And he hypes up himself and Beulah. Out comes Tommy Dreamer stalking to the ring, dragging a ladder and looking pissed. Jason is in a neck brace. He barks at Tommy, blaming him for the neck injury. Credible attacks Tommy from behind. He crotches him on the guardrail, canes him in the head. Storm baseball slides a chair to Tommy's head as Shane comes out to help Tommy. Storm grabs the mic, says the Dreamer wasn't much of a challenge for him, so maybe Shane would be better, but he'll still kick his ass. And this is where we get our match as Shane is laughing. Beulah shit talks Fran, says history will repeat itself, and Beulah will kick Fran's ass again. Shane and Francine get in the ring, but Storm and Beulah bail. Shane gets the mic. Shane calls him a Calgary piece of shit who watches too much Monday Night Wrestling. He doesn't want to wait for the arena. He wants to kick his ass now. The bell rings. Storm is slow to get back in, but after a break, Shane is working him over with a clothesline, knocks him to the floor. Storm pulls Shane out, but Shane hammers away, crotches him on the post. Beulah rakes Tommy's eyes. Storm takes him down. Storm shoves him into the railing, kicks away. Back of the ring, Storm keeps pouring it on, but he can't put Shane away. Shane fires back and crotches Storm, but then he hits a low blow. Storm kicks Shane away, but drops him on his head. And Shane hits a gourd buster. Shane gets the belly to belly, but Credible is in with the cane. Shane fights him off. Francine kicks Jason, but as the ref is carrying out Francine, Credible smacks Shane with the cane, and Storm covers for the win. Credible and Storm kick the shit out of Shane with the cane a little bit more after the match, as Francine just narrowly dodges a cane shot. Pretty good beatdown. Tommy returns, but it's too late. The damage has been done. The match is whatever. I thought the segment to open it was hot. Shane is clearly pretty busted up and falling apart. He doesn't really have that next gear anymore. I don't know if he emptied the tank completely at House Party and is now just kind of on fumes or where he's at. But a good finish as Storm and Credible continue to show good chemistry as a team. Storm, of course, is fantastic, and the feud's going to roll on. So I went 2.5 here, Jenny. I thought it was a perfectly cromulent match and then pretty good angle around it.
Yeah, 2.5 sounds right. I just thought it was very weird. There was some sort of weird energy for this match. Like, but it's fine. Like it continues their story. It just builds more heat on the hatred that they got going on between each other. And, you know, it's just felt like another step in their story. Nothing really special here. I do love the use of Francine more. I feel like she's always been in stuff, but I feel like she's more and more becoming, like a real member of that triple threat team.
Right.
Yeah, I went 2.5 on it too. It's a match that happened. It was just kind of there wasn't much here. I do like Lance getting a big win over Shane, that so that was good. But I mean, I don't know. Besides that, it kind of advances the story, but it was missing something. And like you, I do wonder if Shane is very banged up at this point, because he doesn't seem to be moving well again, which has kind of been the case for him for the past, oh, let's say 2 years. So, but yeah, I went 2.5 on it.
All right, let's get to our awards for this episode. Best match, I think by default, was Lynn Sabu, worst Douglas Storm. There's not much else to pick from him.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
All right, best moment. I went with the Taz and Sabu brawl.
I might go with Pulp Fiction overall.
I was going to say Pulp Fiction probably for me.
Well.
All right, most 90s, I went with Taz's orange White Sox jersey, which was like a thing at the late 90s, like with all the different colored hats and jerseys.
Also, Rob Zombie feels pretty 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a most 70s moment with Taz mentioning the thrill in Manila.
All right, Rising, I went New Jack, Jerry Lynn, Sabu, Storm, Credible.
Yep.
New Jack. Falling, did you say yes, I did. Yeah.
All right.
Falling, I just went Doring and Roadkill.
They
cut their ship push shit in the opening.
Yeah.
I forgot they were in this episode. That tells you where they go.
Final grade, I went 6.5 out of 10. Again, I mean, we were so hot coming out of November to Remember on TV. Like, just two awesome months, December into January, were fantastic. It seems like we hit a little lull here as we head toward the pay-per-view. So let's see if we can bounce back with our last one. But what do you guys have a grade on this?
6 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I went the 6 on it too.
All right. Final week of TV here for us tonight, March 20th, 1999. Joey's in the ring with Tommy Dreamer, and the crowd in the arena is red hot as we're counting down to Living Dangerously. Shane Douglas and Francine hit the ring to a big pop. Tommy proclaims Fran the queen of extreme, and they shake hands. He says the whole thing went down in Queens. He saw a guy that had a crappy year with injuries at the end of his rope, and for once he listened to the people that begged him not to go because it's not time. He says, this is Thomas Lachlan talking to you, Troy Martin. They've been together since the beginning, and it's not time to go. Shane is the best color man the company ever had. He added to pay-per-views, even when he wasn't wrestling. His promos are on top. What he did to ECW is not paralleled by anybody else, and whether he has another match, the worst match, or a title match, he'll always be the franchise. Shane shakes his hand. The crowd chants for him. Tommy says the triple threat has a different meaning for everyone. And then there's a fan chirping, and Tommy kind of roasts him. He says everyone's been doing the triple threat symbol for 6 years, but it really means ECW, not triple threat. Shane wants him to raise the three fingers, and he'll do it tonight in the original house of the sickest hardcore motherfucking wrestling, no matter what happens. Dreamer says Lance Storm thinks personal insults will hurt him, but he sees guys like Storm in his gym all the time, and they're whiny. Insults don't hurt him, but it was right, and he will acknowledge one thing. ECW, Storm, and the fans – Tommy Dreamer does have a big fat fucking ass. Tommy pulls his pants down, and we see Lance sucks written on his boxers. Tommy says Storm's the guy that goes for Chinese and has steamed chicken and broccoli, while Tommy loves spare ribs and everything else. When Tommy's out partying, he gets the munchies, he goes to White Castle, and he's 25 cheeseburgers. He's happy with his fat ass love handles, and Storm can't kick his ass no matter how big he gets. As for Storm's rat, any girl with low self-esteem to have plastic surgery just to get in Tommy's head is sick and pathetic. Tommy's courage, heart, and determination come from ECW, not from some rat, and his integrity doesn't come from a vial. Dreamer, Francine, and Shane raise the three fingers, and we are out. And this is quite the promo. I mean, Dreamer's heated. It's probably the most heated we've seen him in a bit. We get clips from Queens to set up the big tag match. Shane, Tommy, and Francine start to leave, and Lance Storm and Credible attack him in the aisle with canes. They beat the piss out of them, while Jason and Beulah detain Francine. So this whole thing is red hot. It's a great promo. Tommy's on fire. I guess we haven't really talked about the finality of this, but I guess Terry Funk is gone again. So I don't think we're going to get any closure on that angle, but it's fine. This is way better than whatever the fuck that was anyway. So I'm good with this. You know, they continue to push Storm as like a roid guy, which is a weird approach, I think. But I like the attack after too. I thought they really beat the crap out of him. And I think there's a lot of heat on this match, Jenny, for Living Dangerously between Storm, Credible, and Dreamer and Douglas here.
Yes, it was about time Tommy did something good to add to this feud besides get his fucking ass beat. And he's doing it on the mic, which is smart. It's good. You need to talk some shit to these guys, right? Mm-hmm. And I love his acknowledgement of Francine. I love his acknowledgement of Shane. and saying their shoot names, you know, again, making it real personal.
Laurie Loughlin.
Yeah, he's really good here. He's really good at finding like the heart of a promo. And he knows exactly what to say here. And but then he turns around and does his little kind of newfound comedic thing with the Lance Sucks on his boxers. I thought it was funny. I liked it. It's kind of a big fuck you to those young guys too. So they also need that. And I love them raising the three fingers at the end. So this was all like very good. And then the beatdown at the end, really, I mean, we're all primed for this feud now, Maddie.
Yeah, I thought this was really good, too. You mentioned it. Dreamer is very angry at basically everything that's been going on. Probably the most heated he's been since Beulah broke her neck and he was smashing his head on the lockers. So I thought this was good.
Yeah.
But then he turned on the comedy thing, and that was really good, too. Him having Lance Sucks all over his ass. And the line about saying his integrity doesn't come from a vial, I thought was a fantastic line. And like you said too, like they're just openly saying that Lance Storm is on the horse pills there. What are we doing? So that's
makes me think he isn't. It makes me think he isn't.
Yeah. I do.
Maybe he was. I don't know.
I could say it was 1999. Honestly, it wouldn't shock me if everybody was doing something.
I'm not trying to be naive. He just seems more like the guy that spends like 18 hours a day in the gym versus like the steroid guy.
We don't use steroids in Canada. Calgary, Alberta, Canada. But yeah, this is really good. And again, another beatdown is Dreamer and Shane again get the shit kicked out of them. So I'm interested to see where this goes for the pay-per-view. I think the pay-per-view match will be good. We'll see. But it should be heated as all hell, given everything that's happened the past couple of months. So,
I mean, it is 1999. Maybe it's Andrew, him and Maguire.
Yeah, Maguire, Sosa,
Zucker,
that whole crew, Balco. All
right. We get our opening animation. Joey's in the nest. He hypes up the pay-per-view. Takes a shot at Holyfield versus Lewis along the way. What was that infamous for, Matt? Was this a fart bomb?
That was a fight. It's the one I think it is. Lennox Lewis was supposed to win, or it was either Lewis or it was a pretty clear like decision victory for one of them. Might have been Holyfield, but then the judges ruled it a draw, like controversially, and everybody got all kinds of pissed off about it. There was like investigations on the judges and shit.
This
like that.
Boxing started going this way, like
right about there.
That thing was around late 90s. I feel like
I
feel like the last big hype of like. And I don't watch boxing enough to know how good it is still, but I think like that was the last hype of like within the pop culture, like everyone got together to watch boxing was the Tyson Holyfield when he bit his ear. I feel like after that, it kind of went downhill, you know, and stuff perked up with Mayweather and stuff, but not to me, it was never like must see, like with multiple boxers. Maybe Mayweather was must see, you know, however, a couple times a year when he fought, but like, I remember in the 90s, like my uncle ordered like all the big ones, and it wasn't just like Tyson. It was like whoever, you know, like everyone.
Now it's like one or two guys if you're lucky. When back then it was like five or six.
You had a lot of it, and especially here with Vinny Paz, it was like that was a big deal. So anytime he fought was a big thing. So it was just different. But anyway, we get an ad for Living Dangerously. We head to the ring as Spike Dudley's taking on Mr. Mustafa. Mustafa comes out. He's followed by Spike carrying a road sign. Spike goes right at Mustafa, eats a back elbow. Mustafa pounds away. Spike slips out of a suplex. He kicks low, hits the acid drop. But the Dudleys come in and beat down their brother. They throw the ref out of the ring, and they leave Spike for dead. This is really more of a segment than a match. The Dudleys continue to protect Mustafa. Again, I like Spike, but sometimes they like go too far with the Spike upset. Like they're building Mustafa as this big threat to New Jack for the pay-per-view. And yes, the Dudleys are his muscle, but they're basically saving him from losing to Spike Dudley. How he's supposed to beat New Jack. So maybe he beats Spike and then they come in and kick the shit out of Spike anyway, would have been fine with me. I just think him or have New Jack come out and help Spike. And then they come out, just give us something that's more than Mustafa almost losing to Spike in like 30 seconds. To me, it was just kind of silly for a guy they're pushing big time, but I want a quarter of a star, Matt. I mean, to me, it was again, more of a segment, but.
Yeah, I almost didn't rate it. I did go zero on it because, I mean, it's not much here. But it is weird to your point. Like, I don't know. it's the whole Mustafa thing, and I've enjoyed the promos and whatnot, but it is just weird how they're doing this whole thing. I don't know. Just have Mustafa squash some random guy, like fucking throw Danny Doring out there or something. Like you don't need to shove Spike in this, even though he's involved with the Dudleys. Like, I don't know. It's very weird. It felt like two steps forward with the promos, and now this felt like a step back. So it's just a super weird thing to have on here, Jenny.
Yeah, I went kind of zero on it too, because it didn't really make sense. I thought New Jack was going to come out to help Spike, but then Spike just got completely fucking murdered before he can even get helped. Yeah, I don't know. This just felt like filler, just time waster, like nothing. I don't think it adds to the feud. It maybe doesn't hurt it that much either, but it was totally fine, but I didn't rate it.
All right, Natural Born Killers hits, and out comes New Jack. Gertner says New Jack can get his hands in Mustafa tonight and not have to wait for the pay-per-view, but he has to get through the Dudleys first. New Jack leaps at Mustafa, but the Dudleys catch him and beat him down. New Jack grabs a crutch and rallies back, starts to take over as Mustafa's completely gassed in the corner from his 30-second match. I mean, he looks really weak. I don't know if he's really gassed or selling, but this none of this made him look good in any way. Like,
not at
he
all.
He almost loses to Spike. It's like a 1 minute long match, and he's literally laid in the corner dying. Like, at least have him back there, like, all right, guys, you go. And he's like sticking and moving or something. And instead, he's like this in the corner, like dead. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, why is he so gassed? The Dudleys keep blocking Mustafa in the corner. New Jack breaks through with the crutch, gets his guitar. Mustafa begs off. Devon recovers. The Dudleys hit the 3D and leave him laying. Now, I think this is the first misstep we've seen in this feud. The promos have been awesome. The initial turn was good. This to me, like, just was like one thing more than we needed probably to push this over. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of looked bad. I didn't think Mustafa looked good in any way. And, you know, hiding behind the Dudleys, worn out from a 30-second match against Spike, it just, none of it made sense. Like, just put him in there with a big guy or something. Just something different than what we got. This made no sense. What did you think, Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, again, anyway, it wasn't great. And they're kind of blowing their load too, because we need to see all those weapons and stuff at the pay-per-view. Like, you know, we need a little bit more of the promos and shit as opposed to this bullshit.
Yeah, this didn't do anybody any favors. And I mean, like you said, Mustafa looked awful. He's passed out in the fucking corner. So, like I said, just have him fucking squash somebody or something. But I mean, if he's blowing up in 30 seconds, it's probably not a good sign that he could do anything. Assuming he really was blown up in 30 seconds, like, I don't know. It doesn't speak to, I don't know if we're going to see anything good at the pay-per-view if he can't handle a 30-second match with Spike.
You're right.
Right. And I don't know if he was really gassed again or if he was just like, okay, Sal being in the corner or whatever it was. Right. He's not good. Mm-hmm. All right, backstage, Jasmine St. Clair is in the shower. She says she's getting so wet over Living Dangerously, and then she drops the soap. Joey's in the nest. He says Jasmine St. Clair will be at Living Dangerously, and so will Sid. And he runs down the card. Backstage, our buddy Prezak is with Don Callis. He asks why he's here. Callis talks about suffrage in Bosnia, and Prezak stammers. He tries again, and Callis says the miserable have no hope. So not much here from Callis right now.
No.
So kind of playing a little coy as to why he's with us. But we get entrances for our super grudge match. Everyone hits the ring. We take a break for Living Dangerously ad. We come back. Joey says that Lance Storm and Justin Credible have paid off the Dudleys to take their spot. And then they left. Back in the ring, Bubba's ranting on the mic. He says they have nothing to gain by wrestling. He calls out RVD and Sabu to join them instead. We get a big pop. And now we have a three-way dance for the tag team titles. Joey says Shane and Tommy face Credible and Storm Living Dangerously, and maybe that could be for the tag team belts. So suddenly we have a random three-way dance for tag team titles. Dreamer and Douglas, the Dudleys, and RVD and Sabu. Joey says the format's out the window. After full intros, RVD, Bubba, and Shane start off. As Joey says, the only time Tommy ever held gold was back in Eastern Championship Wrestling when he was tag team champions with Johnny Gunn. But Shane Douglas double-crossed him, leaving to Kevin Sullivan and Tasmaniac taking the belts 5 years ago. Shane starts hot with a beatdown on RVD. Bubba interrupts. He works over both guys. They get punches, chops, and kicks traded off. A couple quick pin attempts. Tommy chokes Bubba in the corner. RVD and Shane throw down. Bubba snaps RVD with a back suplex. Sabu tags in. He jumps Bubba, but Devon comes in as well, triggers a brawl with everybody, including Sign Guy and Fonzie. Sabu puts Sign Guy through a table bridge with a splash. Joey notes Sabu's orange pants, taunting Taz. Sabu and RVD double up Shane. Bubba comes over as a big powerbomb on Sabu. We continue to float through some offense with no advantage either way as they keep trading off near falls. Just a wild flow. Everyone spills outside except for RVD and Devon. RVD gets two on a dropkick. Gertner screaming on the floor. Devon gets a hanging neckbreaker as Tommy's battering Sabu in the crowd. Everyone ends up on ringside, but Fonzie hops in the ring as Joey says Gertner sounds like a castration victim. The Dudleys brutalize RVD with a chair, but Bubba slips in the ring and cuts off Sabu before he can fly into Tommy. Tommy comes in and mashes Bubba with a chair shot and a DDT. RVD comes in with a five-star frog splash on Tommy. We run through a quick flurry of finishers from all, and Sabu eliminates the Dudleys with a triple jump moonsault on Devon. Dreamer hits a Dreamer driver on Sabu for two. Shane and RVD are fighting. RVD and Sabu get Rolling Thunder on Tommy for two as the Dudleys are still lingering at ringside. RVD takes out Shane on the floor, but Dreamer drags him away, and they slug it out until Tommy hits a Spicoli driver through a broken table. Back inside, Sabu is beating on Shane's ankle. He gets two on a slingshot sidekick. Shane comes back with a stun gun. Francine and Tommy come in with a ladder. Credible and Storm come out. They throw Tommy off the ladder. They put Shane on the table bridge, and Sabu puts him through it with a springboard leg drop. RVD gets two on Tommy with a five-star. The Dudleys, Credible, and Storm are talking on the floor. Sabu and RVD beat down Tommy with a table and then hit him with a Van Damminator with the table and the chair to finish him off. So good little brawl. I thought Shane just felt very marginalized, though, in this. He felt very backseat. He looked a little bit better in the ring, but he felt like a little bit lost out there. The Dudleys are on fire. It's a good match to kind of toss out to save the heated stuff for pay-per-view. So I went 3 stars on the match, Matt. The only thing that didn't click for me is, like, I don't know, why would RVD and Sabu come out and put the belts on the line because the Dudleys called them out? Like, it made no sense. You know, if you're going to do that, just have it be a match. Just say they've earned a title match. Like, it just makes no sense that the Dudleys call them, oh, yeah, we'll come right out and we'll take on four men for the belts with a guy with a broken jaw. Like, it just didn't really make sense. I know they're fighting spirit and all that, but that was, like, one thing too much for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I went 3 stars on this, too. It is a fun match. They kept a lot of stuff moving. Like, it was a very fast-paced match, all six guys flying around the ring. So that was good. But, yeah, I'm kind of with it was missing something for me for it to hit that next level. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, the RVD-Sabu thing was kind of weird where they just come out. But, I don't know. I thought the sidekick was fine, too. But I thought the finish overall was kind of meh. But, like, yeah. it was fun. But it was just, I don't know. Like, we've seen better out of all six of these guys. So, I don't know. It was just kind of, it was missing something for me. So, I went 3 stars on it. It is a good match. But, yeah, it's weird to feel disappointed about a 3-star match. But here we are, Jenny.
Well, I did 3.25. I really liked it, the wild brawl. Nature of it. I didn't think Shane looked that bad. I mean, it's hard when you're in the ring with RVD and Sabu, you know, you're just, I don't know. They're gonna look a little different, but yeah, mostly I was just like, why are we doing this match? It just seemed very odd to do this random three-way dance for the titles. And I was surprised that the Dudleys got eliminated first. I thought that was very weird because, you know, they're in this hot angle or whatever. So I just thought it was strange that they would get eliminated. But again, all the spots were cool. RVD and Sabu ball out. There's a bunch of table breaks and shit. So, I mean, it's a fun ass match to watch.
All right, let's get to our awards here. We had a little post-match. Credible and Storm get in the ring. Sabu and RVD bark at them for causing all this. Joey says they're a threat to the titles. Taz hits the ring, starts brawling with Sabu. Everyone else brawls as well. We get a big pull apart. Taz and Sabu end up alone in the ring and stare down as the crowd is hot for Sabu. They start brawling again until Taz gets the mic. He tells security to clear out because he wants to talk to Sabu and he'll stay calm. Taz says this all started right in this ring, in this very arena. Now, living dangerously, he's going to choke Sabu out one more time because he's the world champion. Sabu attacks him, beats him down, and puts him through a table to some booze as we wrap up. So, interesting approach. We get some blurred lines on the face heel sides here of Taz and Sabu as we head to the pay-per-view. It was interesting. The crowd was kind of sided with Taz here. It had kind of been the other way a little bit before this. So, any quick thoughts on that post-match, Jenny?
I thought it was pretty good. Taz is just so hyper focused on Sabu, and he is feeling himself, and it's really coming across in things like this. Normally, I don't think he would do something like this.
Right.
So I think being champ has really brought out, you know, something in Taz that makes him get up in everybody's faces even more than he already did.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see Sabu kind of get the upper hand here at the end with him putting Taz through the table. I thought that was an interesting way to go about it. But yeah, I like where Taz just saying, "I just want to talk to you, man. Let me talk to you. Just let me talk to you." I thought that was great. Like, you knew how that was fucking going to end. But
yeah,
I enjoyed it's a good last final seg. I feel like the Taz Sabu build overall, it's been good, but I feel like it needed something like this, just a wild pull apart brawl to really drive it home. So I'm glad we got that.
And I'm curious, you know, I think we've all been a little bit low on some of the Taz Sabu stuff, like as far as like meeting the hype. It's been like very good, so we'll see if this is the one that finally breaks through for them, because I feel like it's the one that's had the most like tangible build. I know Barely Legal did have a good story, but it also felt more like, hey, it's our first pay-per-view, here's a classic,
right?
And then their rematch was very good too, but kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. This one feels like it's got the belt on the line. You know, the anger's there, they've really beat the shit out of each other, so I feel like this is one that we'll see if it kind of delivers with more of a crystallized story. All right, best match of the night. I went with that triple threat tag.
Yes. Yep.
All right, and then Spike Mustafa for worst match. Mm-hmm. Best moment, I gave it to Tommy for his Chinese food promo.
Yep.
Yeah. Or Jasmine St. Clair in the bath.
Well, no.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Most 90s, I went with, I guess you go with Jasmine, or changing the format on the fly, as Joey says, pretty much.
Yeah, so.
Stock Rising, I went Dreamer, Storm, Credible, RVD, and Sabu.
Taz, I think, too.
Yeah Taz. Taz, yep.
Stock Falling, I went Spike and Mustafa. I just hated that whole thing.
Yep.
And Don Callis.
Oh, how dare you.
It feels like a soft launch for Donnie Boy. We'll see what he gets into.
Yeah.
It was not a good one. I'll say that.
No, I'll give you that. Yeah.
All right. Final grade. I went 6.5 out of 10. Kind of about the same as last episode. A little disappointing. I mean, again, we've had some awesome TV in December and January, and it feels like we limped a little bit into Living Dangerously here.
You're right. I was kind of worried about this, but I did the 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah, it feels like some of those other pay-per-views we've seen where it felt like two or three episodes too many of TV in between the pay-per-view. So I went 6 on this one, too.
It felt like they could have... And you know, I know Rocco has talked to us before about how they didn't use TV as like a traditional go-home and all. They were watching it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But they could have structured the arena shows a little bit better to have them set up to have some hot stuff going into that pay-per-view. Because I guess most people watching the TV are probably going to order the pay-per-view anyway. But at least give us a... I feel like to have two of the final 3 weeks going into the show pretty much be canned stuff or like kind of whatever from Dover was kind of poor planning. Like, we should have had a hot run of ECW or the arena or Queens heading into this, or even like a Florida town that, you know, maybe was a hot one, but like, give me something like that heading into this pay-per-view versus a clip show, Dover, and then like kind of a half arena show. So.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I usually am. All right. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll have Living Dangerously 1999 right here on this podcast. Be sure to check us out. Subscribe now so you don't miss anything. We're on audio, we're on video, like most of the stuff in North South Connection. Be sure to subscribe across all social media. Again, we have a lot going on for us in media season, so hang with us, stick with us, comment, share, all the things that you can do out there for us. We appreciate it, and we'll keep doing this for you. So stay extreme. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks when we're Living Dangerously. I went to jail at the age of 15, a young buck selling drugs and stuff, who never had much, trying to get a clutch on what I could not touch. The court play me so now I face incarceration. Pacing, no one upstates my destination. Handcuffed in back of a bus, 40 of us. Life as a shorty shouldn't be so rough. But as the world turned, I learned life is hell. Living in the world no different from a cell. Every day I skate from Jake's, giving chase, selling bass, smoking bones in the staircase. Though I don't know why I chose to smoke cess. I guess that's the time when I'm not depressed. But I'm still depressed, and I ask, what's it worth? Ready to give up, so I seek the old earth. Who explain working hard may help you maintain. To learn to overcome the heartache.
hurts and pain. You got stick up kids, corrupt cops, and crack rocks and stray shots. All in a block that stays hot. Leave it up to me while I be living proof to kick the truth to the young black youth. But shorties running wild, smoking cess, drinking beer, and ain't trying to hear what I'm kicking in his ear. Neglect it for now, but yo, it got to be accepted that what? The life is hectic. Cash fools everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash fools everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash fools everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash fools everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Dollar, dollar.